Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We often use the term the traditional American family, and I know what you probably picture there. You picture mother, father, 2 or 3 kids. You might even picture the kind of classical arrangement of the family there. And while structurally that certainly is the traditional American family, there's no denying that the philosophy upon which that has been built in American society might surprise you. You say, how has the traditional American family failed so spectacularly here at the beginning of the 21st century? Why couldn't it withstand the assaults of the sexual revolution, the general social pressure, and the general decay of American civilization, Western civilization, that has been brought to bear upon it? Why didn't it stand up? Why has it failed? Well, there's a reason. Maybe the traditional American family is not what you think it is. Joining us to talk about philosopher John Locke's influence on the American family and perhaps answer the question why it's failed, Dr. Alan Carlson, former professor of history at Hillsdale College, former president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, and author of a recent column for Chronicles magazine titled Too Steep a Price, Why the Liberal Family Died. Dr. Carlson, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Pleased to be with you.
What most people think of and call the traditional American family, either pejoratively or admiringly, you call the Lockean model of the family. Why is that?
Well, it actually goes back to the political philosopher of the 1690s, John Locke. Writing in England to defend the overthrow of a king, he felt he had to destroy the patriarchal basis of monarchy. The patriarchal being, you know, a male privilege, male leadership, male headship as a natural, necessary thing. In doing so, he also decided he had to completely alter family relations and knock out any reference to male headship as having some natural or necessary foundation. And that's the Lockean family. It's a marriage of equals, of a husband and a wife. Generally, wives are sort of, husbands are allowed to believe they're sort of head of the family, but there's no, Locke provides no basis for it. It's a marriage of very limited purpose, the purpose of bearing and raising children. But mostly, human beings are supposed to be free and equal. Marriage becomes a very secondary thing. And actually, the Lockean family model became very dominant in the late 18th and early 19th century in the United States, as well as it had in England. And it led to a general dismantling or weakening of marriage and family law. For a long time, it worked because it was held in balance by the Christian view of marriage and family, which is very different and has a different understanding of equality, spiritual equality, but male and female roles can and should be different. It allows for male headship as long as male headship is, in fact, commands male headship so long as the husband makes his wife's protection and happiness his first priority. But that was held in balance for a long time, but in the last 50 or 60 years, it fell apart, and that's our crisis right now.
Many would simply not be able to see a difference between the Lockean model of the family and the Christian model of the family. They equate the two. You mentioned just a few things just there. Where do they get it wrong?
Well, Lockean family, again, renounces or at least does away with male headship as a real thing, as something that's necessary and proper and needed for the family to survive as an entity. Again, it makes it entirely provisional. It also promises women equality, complete equality. And once women decide that the price is too great to pay to keep a man in the house, to let him pretend he's the head of the household. Once that decision's made, And that's what American feminists did about 50 years ago. They just go off on their own. They renounce their own innate attachments to children, their own, I mean, Locke, I think, properly saw that women are, in their nature, have a desire to protect and nurture children. But once the equality principle achieves primacy, they throw that over, and they wind up rejecting not only the marriage to a man, but they wind up rejecting children as well.
John Locke was forming his ideas at a time when the family was transitioning from a, well, for lack of a better word, a means of production to a kind of a non-productive entity. To what degree does that play into this demise?
Actually, quite well. I don't think Locke foresaw where he was heading with that, because his model of a very weak, functionless family, just basically just having the children, and then divorcing when the children are grown or gone out of the house, which is, again, something he thought was perfectly fine, that fits very well into a modern urban industrial economy, where weak families and a strong emphasis on individual freedom and autonomy fit in pretty well with the demands of an unregulated, non-moral or marketplace. So it actually fit in pretty well, but it left the family in serious trouble. The functionless family is a weak family. Again, Locke welcomed that. So did leaders of the capitalist economy, who didn't care about much else other than maximizing profits. Fortunately, some businessmen and some businesswomen do think beyond that. But the Lockean model was of a weak, functionless family that dissolved once the children had grown up fits in quite well with a modern industrial economy.
You say that the first thing about the Lockean family that spelled its demise was that it began with a faulty liberal anthropology. What was it?
Well, John Locke said that males have just two drives. One is a drive for self-preservation, and the other is a drive for sex, for a copulation. I mean, he said it was as simple as that. The phrase, in fact, he used was, "What father of 1,000, when he begets a child, thinks farther than the satisfying of his present appetite?" That men are pretty crude. This grows out of an earlier philosopher, Thomas Hobbes, who Locke based his own theory on. I just think it's a wholly inadequate view of male human nature. Men are not just the creeps of the clods that are assumed at the bottom of Locke's philosophy at its very foundation. The Christian view of men, and like the Christian view of women, is that men and women are both born incomplete. They need each other to become complete, and they only become complete and whole when they become one flesh. They're also born different. Different skills, different orientations. Women breastfeed extremely well. Men do not. I mean, just to choose one obvious example. Again, the Christian view of human nature is that when they come together, their complementarities rise to the surface, and in fact, their marriage becomes truly one flesh, something greater than the sum of its parts. That is completely alien to Locke's view of human nature. And I think that's another reason why that has played out to the demise of family bonds in our time.
You said that his soft patriarchy was a fragile thing, that as long as women believed they had to keep a man at home in order to satisfy their maternal instincts, they would put up with it. But as you mentioned before, once feminism said, you do not belong at home with your children, that was out the door.
It really was. And again, John... Some have tried to blame, say, for example, same-sex marriage on John Locke. It is, I think, quite clearly true that Locke would not have supported same-sex marriage. He did see marriage as having one reason, which was the procreation of children and their nurture for the early years, and same-sex marriages can't do that. So we can't blame everything on him, but what we can, I think, blame on Lockean liberalism, which is the dominant form of liberalism in the United States, has been for several centuries, is that it stripped marriage and it stripped the family unit of all of its strengths, left it weak, provisional, And when trouble came, and particularly when the props of Christian of the Christian worldview got knocked away, which they have been in recent decades, nothing was left. And the Lockean liberal family, what is in fact properly called the traditional family, has dissolved in so many ways and in so many different places.
Alan Carlson is our guest. He's former professor of history at Hillsdale College, former president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, and author of a recent column for Chronicles magazine titled "Too Steep a Price: Why the Liberal Family Died." When we come back, how did the Lockean model of the family rely on social engineering?
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
How do we continue faithfully to confess and practice our Lutheran faith in a culture of secularism, pluralism, and relativism? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is the 2017 edition of Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 edition.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Repentance and forgiveness, sin and grace, law and gospel. More than cliches, real preaching for real people in need of hearing the real Christ. Christ for You and the Divine Service at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, Illinois, where we gather every Saturday night at 6 and on the Lord's Day, Sunday mornings at 7:45 and 10. Look for the Church of the Neon Cross on I-55 between exits 30 and 33. Find us on the web, stpaullutheranchurchhamel.org. St. Paul Lutheran Church of Hamel, where there is the forgiveness of sins, life and salvation for the people of God.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about philosopher John Locke's influence on the American family. Dr. Alan Carlson is our guest. Folks, one of the most talked about books in the last 2 years on the topic of Christianity and culture is The Benedict Option. You have an opportunity to meet and hear its author, Rod Dreher, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference later this week in Houston, Texas. Now, it's too late to register and receive the meal plan and child care, but you can still register for the conference. Registration is $80. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston. Dr. Carlson, you say that the Lockean model of the family relied on social engineering. Why and how?
Well, again, I think its fundamental basis is flawed. Its understanding of human nature is flawed. And once that is true, in order to get the result that you want, you have to engineer things. People sometimes celebrate Locke for his educational theories, and they have some merit here and there, but mostly what they require is they're trying to retrain human beings in ways that are different from their real nature. Again, it's trying to eliminate, in any real sense, the profound and sometimes quite delightful differences between men and women. It's trying to eliminate any understanding of rights, particularly of natural rights, and of the rights you can claim as having not only individual manifestations, but group manifestations. That is, the family has some rights that on some times, on some occasions, trumps those of the individual. So once you violate human nature, you're going to have to engineer people to work their way through. And I'd say, in some respects, the worst aspects of a modern public school education has been, just again, trying to twist human beings to fit sort of the failing and collapsing Lockean model. Again, it's a task of social engineering, relying heavily on education, but also on law. When young children are now being taught about gender theory and so on, again, it's a logical consequence of Lockean liberalism and of the need to engineer young people into beings that will fit into the model.
To what degree was the what you call the liberal quest for individual development a part of that?
Well, it began not so much with Locke exactly, but the line of liberal theory moved eventually from, first of all, from securing certain natural rights at the beginning to the idea that if properly structured society would allow each individual to become self-defining, self-actualizing, that we began to see signs of this theory in the late 19th century. It's become quite common in the 20th century. And indeed, American law, through the opinions of Justice Kennedy, now reflects this idea that the end of every person is to self-define themselves and their own morality and their own gender. All of this grows out of the original liberal quest and focus exclusively on individual rights, to the exclusion of the claims of families, religious communities, and others.
So the family, rather than being seen as a good or an end in itself, is viewed solely as a means, a mechanism for fostering individuality.
For fostering individuality, and Locke would say to produce children and then to enable them to become self-actualizing and to fit into a rational world order that is free of superstition. And by superstition, they mean free of religion and divinely ordained principles, which they would consider no better than superstitions.
So what does that society actually look like other than what it's free of? What positively does a Lockean ideal society in which this family model serves as a kind of cog in the machine, what does it look like?
Well, I think ideally it would be one where people freely entered in and out of marriages to produce children, stay together for maybe a decade or two, then go apart and reform new sexual liaisons. Children would be raised to be free and rational and self-actualizing. They would be raised free and of the blemish of religious belief and of doctrine. Of any sort as having a hold on them. Each child must be reared to find its own way, not his or her, but its own way towards its gender identity and its own moral code. That, again, that's what self-actualization means. You each find your own way. You have to find out which of the whatever 50 or 80 genders you are, and that's the end point of liberal theory and of liberal practice.
Well, by some measures, or by some standards, people might argue, well, we are well on our way to achieving that. We are now in the end game of Lockean society. But how does it seem to be going, Dr. Carlson?
Well, I think it's going very poorly. First of all, children among Lockean liberals are disappearing. They simply aren't having them these days. I think the fraud of gender theory, it's a complete fraud. It's based on, I think, on a radical assault on human nature, is going to leave a lot of unhappy, deeply disappointed, and suicidal and otherwise messed up people. I think a society that's based on frail, fragile families is going to be a society ruled by ever increasingly by big government is the only way to impose some degree of order within society to keep us from becoming, as Locke, or as Hobbes worried, and Locke, to some degree of a society of war, of all against all. We're moving in that direction right now. And it's ironic that in the end, Locke's theories of natural rights and social contracts winds up achieving the very thing he sought to avoid. So it's going to be a very troubled, disordered society, a violent society, a society with a lot of unhappiness, with a lot of disease, I mean specifically a lot of venereal disease. Actually, it's pretty much a society that we're seeing emerging right around us right now.
What model of the family, then, has replaced the Lockean model, or perhaps what has the Lockean model inevitably degenerated into?
Well, it's degenerated into, again, the thing it set out to avoid, a war of all against all, an amoral society that is incapable of transmitting and protecting and enforcing a solid, invaluable moral code. A television show that I think captures the nature of the Lockean collapse is Law and Order Special Victims Unit. Every episode is some attempt by law enforcement authorities to try to hold something together in the face of uninhibited sexual desires and uninhibited and almost a complete lack of any sense of what's right and wrong anymore. That's kind of where we are. And Lockeanism worked as long as Christianity was there to keep it under control, hold families together, despite Lockean theory. But in too many cases now, Christianity just doesn't have that opportunity and that chance, and hence the trouble we're in.
Dr. Alan Carlson is our guest. We're talking about philosopher John Locke's influence on the American family when we come back. Is it the best we can achieve? How would he respond? We'll find out after this.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Orphan Grain Train is the Lutheran Federal Credit Union Ministry of the Month. During November, if you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or if you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to Orphan Grain Train. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston. Folks, Concordia Publishing House's Fall Warehouse Sale ends at midnight central tonight. They have more than 1,200 items for $10 or less. You can visit the warehouse sale online, cph.org/warehouse. cph.org/warehouse. You have until midnight tonight central to take advantage of the savings at Concordia Publishing House's fall warehouse sale. cph.org/warehouse. We're talking about philosopher John Locke's influence on the American family, explaining why the American family has so catastrophically failed. Dr. Alan Carlson, former professor of history at Hillsdale College and former president of the Howard Center for Family and Religion and Society, is our guest. How would you respond to someone who says, look, for all of its faults, the Lockean model of the family still had father, mother, child, at least temporarily living together, and that's better than what we're headed toward. Maybe it's the best we can achieve. What would you say to that?
The problem is that can't remain a stable order. I mean, another aspect of Lockean liberalism is that it challenges every precept that is not based strictly on reason, strictly on rationality. And while I think the Christian faith is compatible with a reasoned approach to the world, for many, the skepticism towards what are clearly in the end divine commands or divine ordering of things, once those are thrown out, the structure begins to dissolve. For a very specific example we already talked about, that male headship of a certain kind is divinely ordained. And once the rational mind goes at that and says, well, I can see no reason, I can see no basis in reason for that to be true, because I hold equality to be the highest principle, then things fall apart. So Lockean liberalism could not leave even the residues of the Christian model of the family alone. It kept kind of eating away at it, gnawing away at it, until, at least in large sectors of society, it fell apart.
Why did it last? I mean, you've made the case that it was the counterbalance of the Christian model that kept it as currency in our society for 250 years. Why did it last as long as it did?
Well, again, I think repeated renewals of religious enthusiasm and religious devotion in the United States came along. First Great Awakening, Second Great Awakening. It did prove, as I say, compatible in some ways with an urban industrial society. But it's played out. I guess my argument now is that it's played out. It's no longer going to work. The balance is completely gone. Secular liberalism is becoming aggressively anti-religious. The Christian family model is being attacked relentlessly in law and in public policy, particularly by the federal judges at this point. It's all played out, and we can't rely on that balance any longer. You could say, well, a couple hundred years is a pretty good run. Well, yes, maybe it is, but that doesn't help us now.
Is there a society, perhaps in Western Europe or someplace else, that you can point to and say, look, this is what we face now with an irreparable Lockean model of the family and an out-and-out rejection of the Christian model? This is what the family looks like in the future, as a word of warning.
Well, I think you see that in places such as France, in Germany, but more broadly and more directly in the structures of the European Union, which have become aggressively secular, aggressively in favor of gender role theory, of same-sex marriage. A few countries are fighting it. I was in the country of Poland a few months ago for a World Congress of Families meeting, and the government of Hungary is aggressively battling that, trying to restore and protect a Christian model of family life. But in general, the European Union has embraced the other model completely and is pushing it relentlessly.
You mentioned earlier the increased and then increasingly necessary role of government to maintain something that the family used to do. Is that what we're seeing there?
I think so. I mean, the virtue of the family is that it's there to protect the individual from being alone and defenseless against the state. It's a mediating institution, to borrow a phrase. And there are others, churches, strong religious communities, strong neighborhoods. Sometimes, in the old days, at least strong labor unions could do this in some ways as well. Ways in which to protect the individual from being alone and defenseless against the state. A pluralistic democracy can only survive with strong intermediary institutions. That's what we have to have. And again, liberalism pushes relentlessly to tear them down. To strip away groups such as that as having any claims, any authority, just to leave the individual alone and defenseless facing the state, which, oddly enough, is also the goal of socialism or communism or any of the isms, Nazism. Eliminate the family, leave the state, and the individual is the only players, and the individual will soon find out who's boss.
I have thought and talked about this now going on 20 years. You probably longer. Both of us and many others astonished with which the rapidity with which the insanity of the sexual revolution has been adopted wholesale in its most bizarre forms in the last decade or so. But does what we've talked about here kind of explain that when things finally fall apart, they fall apart, and sometimes very quickly?
Well, I think you've said it very well. It is astonishing. I mean, same-sex marriage, something most people hadn't even heard of 20 years ago, has suddenly now become the law of the land. And the other radical aspects of the sexual revolution, be it transgenderism, polygamy, polyandry, and heaven knows what else, are just around the corner. And yes, as the liberal system emerges without any constraints on it whatsoever, the end result is the chaos that we're seeing right now.
Finally, then, do you have any reason to be optimistic about the future of the American family?
That may be a different, separate conversation, but let me end by saying, yes, I do. I think Christians have faced disastrous moral conditions before. In fact, the early Christian church, the church of the first, second, and third centuries, faced a Roman social, cultural order not much different from the one we're facing, although its genesis was different, but of widespread abortion, adultery, fornication, Greek love, homosexual bonds between men and boys. All of that was common in the Roman period. And somehow the Christians went from being a small little band of people who knew Jesus, a few hundred, to the dominant force within the empire within three centuries later. So the Christians have faced this kind of challenge before. What they did back then is they built strong families. They followed their principles. They worked to both convert pagans to their way of life, but also to raise families and have bigger families and to protect their children, not to sacrifice them to abortion or infanticide. And within a historically relatively brief period of time, they triumphed. So I think within the well of Christian Reconstruction, I think there's still a force there. But again, it requires Christians to understand that they no longer run the culture. They're countercultural in the most fundamental sort of way and need to begin to act with that understanding in mind. This isn't the era of Ozzie and Harriet anymore. It's gone. And Ozzie and Harriet were good Lockeans, but their time has passed. We need much stronger models of Christian family life and of Christian community, of Christian parish life that face a new order and a fast new challenge, but I think should be a time that's of considerable excitement and promise.
Dr. Alan Carlson is former professor of history at Hillsdale College, former president of the Howard Center for Family, Religion, and Society, author of a recent column for Chronicles magazine titled, "Too Steep a Price, Why the Liberal Family Died." You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Carlson, thank you very much.
Pleased to be with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Mary Eberstadt about the primal scream of identity politics. We'll discuss rhetoric and its use both in the church and in civil society with Dr. Jim Tallman. And we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Daniel in the Lion's Den. It is never good for us to build our foundation or to lay our foundation in the wisdom of man. As wise as it may be, John Locke had an idea about what family could be in society. The Bible tells us what God created the family to be, not only in society, but in all of creation. And I'll take God's way over John Locke's, as smart as he may be. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155.